A mass exodus in these pews back here, and I'm wondering if it's because you don't want the back of your head on the camera. And I would just advise that you comb your hair, put a bow in it, and go back to those seats. And all right, make our sanctuary look empty on camera. It's vanity that speaks. There are many things that can weaken our faith. There are many things that can attack our faith. Grief can attack our faith and can weaken us. Disappointments can weaken our faith. Obstacles, trials, a word from a doctor can weaken our faith. But sometimes the attack on our faith is not experiential, but it can be intellectual. In other words, we look at life. We look at how life works. We look at the things that we see, and we look at what God seems to allow to happen. We look at some things that appear to be fairly meaningless. And because we see life, not so much that we're experiencing life, but because of, in many ways, what we see happening, our faith can be damaged. And this morning, I want to look at a letter to you, actually not even a letter, but a book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes means, is from the Greek word teacher, and so the man writing it is saying, I want to teach you something. And then chapter 1, verses 1 and 12, he identifies himself as Solomon, the son of David. Solomon was a man of great wisdom. In fact, he was called the wisest man in the Bible. He was a man of great wealth. He was a man of tremendous accomplishments who pushed the boundaries or the borders of Israel to the farthest that they achieved in the life of the nation. And yet, it seems as though in his life, he reached a place where if he did not give up the faith, he strongly considered giving up the faith. And for those of you who have read his story, there's great indication that he did give up the faith, at least for a time. Whether he came back to the Lord is unknown, but it says that he married 1,000 women, and many of them were women from that worship false gods, and that he incorporated their false gods and allowed them to bring them into the nation. And so there was a backsliding in his heart. But nevertheless, Solomon is writing this, and he's writing about an intellectual struggle that he's having. Now you say, why would this be in the Bible? And why would God allow this book to be in there if it's talking about the intellectual problem Solomon was having with believing in God? But Solomon does say something in chapter 12, verse 11, something to this effect. He says, the words of the wise are the goads of the one shepherd. And I take it that Solomon is saying, the words that I have spoken to you were intended by God. Strangely, they were given by God. They are the words from the one true shepherd to goad you into following him. A goad was a sharp stick that men would use or women would use to move cattle along. In our day, we would say a cattle prod. And so Solomon again is saying, these words I've spoken, although they are the words that appear to be the words of a man who does not believe, a man who does not have faith, nevertheless, they are the words of the one shepherd meant to goad you into following him. And so then the question is for you and I, well, what are those words? What are these words that Solomon gives? What is it that Solomon observes in his life that he wants to communicate to you and I that ultimately should goad you and I into following the one true shepherd? And what Solomon essentially lays out in this book in 12 chapters is a philosophy of life apart from God. It is a view of life that does not factor God into the equation. And as he looks at this life that you and I live, that he lived, that is a life apart from God, what he sees and what he will say 29 times in 12 chapters is that it is a meaningless life, it is a vain life, it is a random life, it is a life that does not make sense, it is a life that as you look at it is defeating to live, it is a life that crushes the soul. It is a life that is intellectually hard to sustain because, again, it is a meaningless, random life. Now, he says, look at, for instance, the mystery or the randomness or the meaninglessness of success. Look what he says in chapter 9, verse 11. He says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all. In other words, Solomon looks at the world and he says it doesn't make sense. It's mysterious. Doesn't make sense why some succeed and why others don't. The fastest should win the race. The wisest should have the most money. The swiftest should outrun everyone. The men of charm, the men of ability, the women of understanding ought to be the ones who are successful, but it doesn't seem to be that way. When you look at the randomness of this world, you wonder why you should do anything because it's all meaningless. I mean, listen, the smartest should have the most money, but did you see it last week? Another Kardashian is now worth $1 billion. That doesn't seem right, Ralph. You and I are bright. Why does she have all the money? That doesn't make sense. There's a meaninglessness to it. And you may be young and you may say, well, listen, I'm young and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get an education. At some point, I'm going to get married and I'm going to have 2 kids. Well, you're right. You're young. Because there's a randomness to life. And you can make your plans, and you can go to college with the expectation that you're going to make a good living, but go get the Forbes 400, the 400 richest people in America, and half of them didn't go to college or dropped out of college. You may say, well, you know what, I'm going to meet a man, and then we're going to get married, and we're going to have a perfect life, and we're going to grow old together, and someday I'm going to play with my grandkids as we sit on the porch together in rocking chairs and hold hands. Well, you're young, because there are fine, upstanding Christian guys who are 20 that run off with their secretary when they're 45, and nobody saw it coming. Nobody saw it coming. You can marry the person that you think you're going to grow old with, but that's no guarantee you're going to grow old with them. Things happen, things that you can't predict. There's a randomness. There's a meaninglessness to life. It doesn't make sense. The best laid plans sometimes fail, and sometimes the guy or the girl who doesn't plan seems to walk out smelling like roses. There's a randomness to it all, and Solomon said, it's meaningless to me. Notice he says not only is success meaningless, it's random, but he says happiness is meaningless. It's random too. Look what he says in chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires. Yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. There is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. Other translations say, again, that he cannot eat it or he cannot enjoy it. He says, if you look at the world, there are people who have everything. They have everything that their heart desires, and yet they don't have happiness. They're not happy. God does not let them enjoy what they have. For whatever reason, they don't have it. They've got everything, and they've got a sad face to boot. They're not happy. I read this, and I've mentioned it in times past, but I find it to be astounding. It was an interview Tom Brady gave several years ago after they'd won the 3rd Super Bowl, New England Patriots. And He says in that interview, it was on 60 Minutes. He says, why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think, God, there's got to be something more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. And the interviewer said, what's the answer? And Brady said, I wish I knew, I wish I knew. What is it? He's a man with success. At that point, I don't know what life has been like since for him, but he's a man with success, but no happiness. Solomon says, that doesn't make any sense. You would think the man with nothing would be unhappy and the man with everything would be happy. You wouldn't think that that would be the way it was. I read an article a while back about this place that opened up in Las Vegas. And for $750, you can drive a bulldozer for 2 hours and push dirt around. For $750, and they're making a lot of money. What kind of guy with $750 says, you know what? My life is so miserable, I think I'm going to pay $750 to play in this adult-size sandbox and drive a bulldozer. But they're raking in the cash. You would think a man with $750 would be happier than that. $750 to throw away, you think he'd just tithe it to his church. But no, he wants to play in a sandbox. You think about that. Solomon says it doesn't make sense. People have everything. They're not happy. People have nothing. And for some reason, they find contentment and godliness to be great gain in their life. He says, look at something else. He said, look at lifespans. He said, so I said to my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said to my heart, this also is vanity. He's talking about dying. He says, the fool dies. The guy who doesn't take care of himself, he dies. The person who has not functioned well in life, he dies. But I've got everything, and I'm the wisest guy on earth, and I'm going to die too. And there's a chance that I'm going to die before he dies. I mean, people who don't know anything, people who abuse their bodies, people who walk away from the Lord, people who smoke cigars, live to be 98. Think about George Burns. And people who take care of themselves rigorously, they don't live. How does that happen? I met a great uncle this week in Florida, and we met for the very first time. I'm starting to meet some of my family on my dad's side. We just became acquainted a few years ago, but my grandfather died when he was 48 or 49. I met his brother in Florida. He's 92 and does not take a single pill. Not even an aspirin. I said, what's the secret? He said, I just trust the Lord. Now think about that. How can one brother, same genes, make it to 92 and doesn't take a pill and another one die in his late 40s? There's a randomness to it all, and it doesn't matter how good you are, the good die young. Doesn't matter how bad you are, oftentimes the bad live forever. And so Solomon looks at it and he says, it's meaningless, it's vanity, it's all random. Whether or not you succeed, that's random. Whether or not you're going to be happy, a lot of that's random. Whether or not you live long or you die young, it's random. So what difference does it all make in the end? So Solomon says, given this, there's really only 3 ways that a person could live. The first way that you can live is you can just give up. You can give up. Solomon is here again. Solomon has reached a place in his life that only a few ever reach. He has it all. In chapter 2, he said he built mansions. He built gardens. He built beautiful places. He married beautiful women. He obtained to great wisdom. He had great power. He had it all. And he said, when I got that far down the road, I found out there was a dead-end sign. Now, most of us, we'll never get there, so we keep going down the road thinking if we can make one more turn, we'll find happiness and contentment and great gain. Solomon says, don't worry about that. I made it to the end of the road, and there ain't nothing down there that you're looking for. So we could take Solomon's words and say, all right, Solomon, you said it ends up in a dead end. I'm just going to give up. I'm going to quit. There's no use. It doesn't make any difference what I do. It's all meaningless in the end. Leo Tolstoy, I think, got close to that, the great Russian writer who had obtained international fame as a writer, and he was married to a woman that he loved very much, living on a vast estate. And then when he got into his 50s, he went into a very great depression because he kept saying to himself, is there anything of meaning in my life that death will not destroy? And he went into a deep depression. You can get there. You can just quit. I remember hearing Fred Craddock preach once, and Fred Craddock was a guy who would be preaching, and then it would get all crazy all of a sudden. He got very surreal, and so you had to follow him closely. But he tells about being in Connecticut, and he was visiting a former student and their family, and they had this greyhound dog that was sitting in the living room, and the student was telling him about the greyhound dog, which was great with the kids. He'd watch it roll around on the floor with the kids. It had been a race dog in Florida for 10 years. It had raced, and they had adopted it. And so he said, the family went to bed. They took the kids to bed, and he said, I was sitting there in the living room with this greyhound dog, and this is where the sermon got surreal. The greyhound dog looked at me and said, so, is this the first time you've been in Connecticut? And Fred Craddock said, I said, no, I went to college here. And the dog said, well, I guess they told you I'm from Florida. I moved up here. And Craddock said, yeah, they told me that you raced and then you retired. And the dog said, did they tell you that? I didn't retire. I quit. See, I'd been running for 10 years. And he said, I was a great runner. I'd run every day. And he said, one day I was sprinting so fast, I'd left the pack behind, and I got so close to the rabbit that I could see it for what it was, and it wasn't even a real rabbit. And he said, I didn't retire. I quit. For 10 years, I chased a fake bunny. And you can do that. You could say Solomon says there ain't nothing there in the end. Tom Brady said you can win 3 Super Bowls and you're going to sit there and say, what difference does it make? So you can just quit. You can say, maybe the thing I'm chasing after is a fake buddy. Maybe he's a fake buddy. Maybe she's a fake buddy. Maybe the career's just a fake buddy. I quit. That's one thing you can do. But there's something else you can do. You can give up. Or Solomon says, you can live it up. And chapter 8, verse 14, and then in chapter 2, he says, you can simply say, I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. That's what I'm going to do. Doesn't matter. I'm not going to quit, but I'm going to enjoy it. I got one day at a time. I'm going to live it up to the max. But there is a problem with that as well. And C.S. Lewis points it out, but Solomon pointed it out as well. You can eat, drink, and be merry so long as you forget that it's meaningless. You can eat, drink, and be merry so long as you forget that you might die tomorrow, that what you're doing really doesn't matter, that it doesn't make that much of a difference, so you can hug a baby. You can kiss a girl. You can build a career. You can enjoy life. You just can't allow yourself to think it's meaningless. There's nothing to it. I'm going to die. I'm going to lose it all. I could die tomorrow. I may not live long. I could be abandoned. Bad things can happen to me. You can eat, drink, and be happy so long as you forget about the reality of your situation. But the reality keeps sneaking back in. It keeps sneaking back in. I remember reading a guy who committed suicide, and he wrote in his suicide note, he said, "I have grown bored and tired of trying to fill a 24-hour day." You can do it so long as you forget that it's meaningless. But then Solomon says something else. He says, you can give up, you can live it up, or you can look up. And so in the conclusion of the matter, chapter 12, verse 13 and 14, he says these words. He said, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work in the judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Think about that. You can give up, you can live it up, or Solomon says you can look up. He says, if you'll look up, if you'll look up, in spite of the randomness, in spite of the apparent meaninglessness of it all, in spite of our existence, if you'll look up, you'll see that there's a God with a plan, so obey him. And you'll see that there's a God with an eye on you, a God who is watching, who will judge everything that happens. So he's watching it. He sees it all. Now, what that means is this. Life may be random to you and I then. It may be random to us. We may look at it and it doesn't make any sense why some do well, some do poorly. Some are sad, some are happy. Some live long, some die early. We may look at the randomness and it's random to us, but it's not random to God. God is looking down, and it may not make sense to me, it may not make sense to you, but it does make sense to the one who sits above. So look up and obey him. He has a plan in all of this. Listen, I was reading the Bible this week, and just thinking about all of those people who must have got into a place, and most of these people in the Bible got to a place where they said, it's meaningless, it's random, it doesn't make sense. I think of Ruth. Her husband comes from Israel. She's there in Moab. And her husband dies, and her father-in-law dies, and her brother-in-law dies, and they're going to go back to Israel. And she's going back with her mother-in-law, Naomi. Think about how meaningless her life felt at the moment. Everything of value she had lost. Leaving her homeland, nothing of value, nothing of purpose. She had to look at it and say, vanity of vanity, it's too random, it doesn't mean anything. But you know what? God had a plan. What she was going through wasn't random to God. He had a plan to bring her back, to bring her to the love of her life, and to make her one of the grandmothers of King David and one of the grandmothers of Jesus. It wasn't random to God. What you're going through may not make sense to you. What you're going through may not have any sense of fulfillment to you. You may be looking at your life and you may be saying, I don't know why they died early. Why did God let that happen? I don't know why this has come up on me physically. Why would God let something like this happen to me? I don't know why they left me. I don't know why they disappointed me. It seems like one step after another, I head in the wrong direction. It seems like nothing really works out for me. I serve God, but there doesn't seem to be anything in it. I serve God, but he seems to be way off. The only reason that seems that way to you is because it's random to you, but it's not random to him. Remember when I was talking to a friend yesterday and we were talking about Moses. Remember, he brings the children of Israel out of Egypt. They get to the water. They got water in front of them, two mountains on their side, and an army behind them. You want to talk about a problem? There was no place to go, and death was coming up behind them. And they started to cry out and say, well, that was a mistake. We should have stayed in Egypt. This is a problem. All of this work to deliver us, meaningless, vanity. It has no purpose other than bring us out into the desert and kill us. But God had a plan because he parted the waters. He took them through. And for 4,000 years, the Jews have been talking about that momentous event. It has encouraged them. That exodus through the water has brought great fulfillment to them. God had a plan in that dead end. Think about Joseph. I'm about finished. Joseph was the best of the brothers. Gets sold into slavery. You sitting there in that prison, you're thinking, talk about a random life. I was supposed to be the golden child. I lived right, they didn't. I was holy, they weren't holy. I go serve Potiphar, I do what's right, I end up in jail. And for all he knew, he was going to be there for a long time. It's meaningless. My life is meaningless. Who can account for what's happened in my life? But it wasn't meaningless and it wasn't random to the one who is set above. He saw it, he understood. And in the meaninglessness of life, as we struggle, as we say goodbye to loved ones, and we say, why did they have to go so early? As we face our own trials and we say, what did I do to bring this on myself? As we face disappointments, as we face betrayal, as we look at our life and we've tried to serve the Lord, and then we go to our high school reunion, and everybody's got a nicer car than our 07 Corolla. You say it's meaningless. It's meaningless. It's random. And all that I've done, what difference does it make? There are days when you'll perhaps sit, and you'll say, I got to be the unhappiest man in town today. And I've got so much to be thankful for. I've got so much to be thankful for, and I am so unhappy. God has blessed me so much. Why am I in such a pit? Seems random to you. It doesn't make sense. But I can testify to you, even when you're in the pit, God has a plan. It's not random to him. He's doing something in your life. He's using you to bless others. He's helping you. He's strengthening you. He's showing you that in your weakness, he can be strong. He's giving you the wisdom that you need to go through the next trial, which might be a little bigger. It's random to us. It doesn't make sense to us, but it makes sense to him. So look up. Look up. Will you stand with me? Look up and stand up, but look up. Look up.